You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Hey, good morning. It is 8:06. Nice to have you back here up north on this Tuesday morning, August 12th. Chad Holmes is standing by. Dan Schaefer coming up a little bit later. And we're also going to discuss how Wisconsin fits into the early timeline of hip-hop as we mark the 52nd anniversary of the unofficial birth of the hip-hop genre. Yeah, I'm going to do that. Pat Kreitlow in Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin History of Hip-Hop. Of course you want to stick around for that. Brittany Merlot is off today. Rain continues to move out of southeastern Wisconsin. Not that they needed any more, but they got some more anyway. And again, you can get your local weather throughout the course of the day here on your local Civic Media station. Chad Holmes is at one of those stations now, 98.9 WXCO in Wausau. Chad, how you doing? Oh, you got to take yourself off mute there, bud. There's that pesky mute button. I hate when that happens. Nope, he's still muted. Look at that. There it
is. I'm looking at three different things, and then I have to bring up my – because I wasn't looking at you when you said good morning. I was looking at other things, you know. Yep. And
that's, again, I'm making the case for the 73-inch, you know, big screen TV as a computer screen, because then we don't have to put windows behind other windows.
And I was right assuming there. That Brittany was here. They had a few minutes. And, and then all of a sudden it's like, here, you're on.
You're on the air. Hello, caller. And here we are.
And then
now
I get all flustered, and what a true radio professional I am.
That seems to be our theme today. So don't worry, you're in good company. There are just days like that. So, so Dan Schaefer is going to be coming up in a little bit here, and obviously, you know, he'll have a Milwaukee perspective on the terrible weather. Hans Breitenmoser was in earlier, talking about the terrible hail damage to some of the crops, you know, in the area between you and him up there in Merrill. We certainly got a lot of heavy rain here in the Chippewa Valley, and lots of lightning. You know, we are without internet and TV service for a while over the weekend. Did you have to get to experience any of that over the weekend?
Well, on Saturday, for the most part, we were hit pretty hard, but nothing like the folks down in southeast Wisconsin. When I was going out and about on Saturday morning, and you know, you hear the term buckets. Yeah. Buckets were coming down. I mean, it really was something else. And again, it just shows you just don't know what to expect in this state. This summer has not been what I would think is a normal summer, what we've had recently. It seems like we've had a lot of drought conditions over the last number of years. This year, nothing like that at all. But then I think, and I was listening to you and Hans earlier talking about, well, you know, you think everything's going wonderfully, and then all of a sudden something else pops up, like the hail and everything else. So I feel for anybody whose living is based on the weather, where you could either have a wonderful bumper crop or one bad storm can just take it all away. I mean, my stomach starts to turn just a little bit thinking about that.
Oh, here's another example. And I don't know how we manage this, but both daughters had outdoor weddings that came off without a hitch. Now, the first one, it rained all day the day before and into the morning, and we were assured it was going to stop raining in time for the afternoon wedding, and it did, but it was no less nerve-wracking to have that happen and then to have a clear day for the second wedding. And that's just 2 days. That's not every day. Like a farmer or anybody else who has to depend on the weather, there's just days when you have to let things, you know, not be in your control.
Yeah, no, and for some people, that's easier said than done, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, exactly. As I was looking at the Wausau Daily Herald, I really took note of this one story. Is it Colby Windows and Doors?
Yes, it is.
And says that they are building more than 100 affordable apartment units near their Wausau factory. and designed to be in a rent frame that workers earning between $18 and $20 an hour could afford to live there. Now, it'll be open to others as well. So it's not exactly the remaking of the company store and the company town. But I guess I'm looking at it as half full, that employers are saying, look, if we want to continue to grow and if no place else is providing affordable housing stock, then I guess we have to take it upon ourselves. But I know what kind of price pressure has been on window and door manufacturers in Wisconsin over the years. So that's why it really caught my eye that, you know, things are tight, but they figured it's worth it to make the investment to build some affordable housing near their factory.
I think you hit it on the head when you talked about looking at it as half full or half empty, however you want to do it. Because again, it kind of isn't that story is so indicative of where we are right now. That I think it's a wonderful thing that this business is doing it. It also shows, and I'm going to kind of broaden it out a little bit.
Sure.
That when you look at, and I'm going to use professional sports, because they always come to the government and say, you got to build us this new stadium. You got to allow us to develop the land around the stadium. And by the way, you also have to cover any losses that we might have. The idea of these incredibly super profitable businesses constantly reaching out to the governments, local government, state government, federal government, whatever
it may be. The
taxpayers, for their opportunity to make even more money. This is a case, like you said, I think there's a risk involved here for Colby Windows, that they've decided, hey, that we think that for our business to thrive, we need to make sure that we have the workers, and for the workers to come and live in this area. And frankly, over the last number of years, I've heard multiple stories about how there have been different businesses that have made offers to folks who would be willing to move here and work here, but they have not been able to find proper housing. And it's not just here in central Wisconsin, but it's elsewhere. And this is a case where this business is being very proactive. But at the same time, it feels as though, doggone it, there's got to be some answers here that that our local government should be involved with, that folks whose main business is to house folks. So it just seems to me that this is a very a story that's very indicative of a major issue that's not just occurring here in central Wisconsin, but throughout the country as well.
Right. In the article in the Wausau Daily Herald, Jeffrey Delaney, Colby Windows and Doors president, noted the city of Wausau and other manufacturing companies in the area have been supportive of the project, which is nice. But again,
go do it.
Hey, if you guys want to do it, you go for it.
Yeah, go and do it.
But I know that plenty of Wisconsin local units of government have said we need to do more, because we want not just this one employer, we want multiple employers to come here. But, you know, they won't come or they won't stay if we don't have enough affordable housing units. I know this has been talked about at the state legislative level as well, and I'm not telling you that I have any easy answers to it, but I feel like almost every community, if they're not already making this a priority, should be figuring out how they too can, you know, increase their stock of affordable housing.
And also, this is affordable housing. As you probably noted in the story, it talks about the rates starting at $895 for one bedroom, $1,295 for two bedroom. And that is absolutely, I think, one of the most important aspects to it. I am thrilled, because I don't know if I'd mentioned this to you, but I mentioned it to somebody else, that like a month ago, I got home from work, and in the door there was this envelope. And I knew what it was. I knew it was my lease for the next year. And over the last 5 years, I mean, it has been not a very pleasant moment where I've opened it up and saw how much my rent was going up for the next year.
Yeah.
So basically, I just put that envelope on a table in my living room, did not open it for at least 3 weeks. And then finally got to the point, well, I gotta open it because I have to either sign it or to say, hey, I gotta find another place to live. And for the first time in 5 years, I opened it up and said, oh, we're not raising your rent. My first thought is, why aren't you raising my rent? What am I missing here that I should be knowing about and talking about? But the good news is, and I don't know what that means. I actually really don't know why this year my rent didn't go up after it'd gone up significantly each of the last number of years. But looking at at this story, this is vitally important. It is vitally important. And you hit it on the head that this has to be something that is looked at with all these municipalities, but also the state has to get a little bit more proactive. Unfortunately, we have a party that's in power in both the state assembly and the state senate that's not proactive about anything.
And this, by the way, this isn't just some small Wisconsin community issue. This is an issue in the New York City mayoral race, and talking about what's called rent control or rent stabilization, so that, you know, again, regular folks can afford to live in New York City. And you've got the candidates there arguing over who's more in favor of affordable rent. So if in New York City, you're talking about the problem of affordable housing, I mean, it's something that is everywhere. But here's the twist on it all. It's a problem now. But again, as the baby boomers and then us early Gen Xers, as we depart this mortal coil, you know, my adult children, they're having a tough time affording a house. There's just not nearly enough. But, you know, about 10, 15 years from now, there's going to be a whole lot of housing that's out there. And that's the generational thing. So you can't wish the problem away. It will eventually change with the demographics. But it's a real problem in the here and now. And I guess I just want to, you know, tip my cap to Colby for being proactive on it.
Somebody doing something. How about that? Yeah. I mean, it's, and I think, I don't know if I mentioned this to you as well. That's a problem I've seen with this country. And again, not to say, you know, it's hating on it. It's just that in so many different issues, We seem to wait until the problem gets to the point where you have to do something instead of trying to look forward and trying to be a little bit more proactive. It's like someday where, you know, whether it's the climate crisis or anything else, oh, well, we have to do something now. And then we show that ability to do something. But there's this conservative streak that's been there for 250 years. Where you just seem not to want to be as proactive as I think it would be, and you save money in the end when you're proactive.
No, and that's, yeah, I was just going to say is that the so-called fiscal conservatives always end up costing us more money because things, you know, become more expensive to address in the long run. So their fiscal conservatism is really just rooted in their own short-term self-interest. They want to be able to get to the next election and say, oh, we held the line on spending. Well, you didn't hold the line, you kicked the can. And then somebody else has got to take care of the problem, somebody else has got to pay for it.
And then when a party like the Democratic Party does something, they sit back there and they pick at it. I mean, I still go back to after the 2008 election. Obama and the Democrats did something about healthcare.
Yeah.
And they don't get rewarded for it. I think that's generally the case in this country where you rarely get rewarded for being proactive. It's somehow it's more, you know, we holding the line is so much more popular than maybe actually trying to fix a problem.
I hope that we're helping to shed some light and get people more aware of all that. Chad Holmes, catch him on 98.9 WXCO in Wausau. Thank you, Chad.
You bet. Thank you, Pat.
All right. Coming up, we're going to talk a little hip-hop history and Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation area, all coming up here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Dan Schaefer will be here in just a little bit as we continue on this Tuesday morning August 12th, and now, as perhaps Wisconsin's foremost expert in hip hop music. No, wait, that's not me at all. Sorry, I got that completely messed up. But I noted that in preparing the history lesson, that hip hop, as opposed to rap, but hip hop as a music genre, actually has a birth date, which I guess for rock and roll is kind of when Bill Haley and the Comets came out, you know, with Rock Around the Clock.
Sure.
Again, yeah. Arguably. Well, there was this apartment party in the Bronx on August 11th, 1973, and it's pegged as the beginning of the musical style we now know as hip-hop, thanks to somebody named DJ Kool Herc, who was spinning multiple turntables and then combining the breaks in the songs in order to make the party more dance floor friendly. And people really liked it, and it caught on, and a genre was born. And I thought, well, does Wisconsin have a connection to this? How far back does hip-hop history go? So this was what I wanted to share, my little nugget of internet knowledge, because in those pre-internet days, different DJs put their own spin on the style. And if you look for Wisconsin's early hip-hop roots, and these are the things I learned these things, and then I just spill them all to the rest of you.
Learnings.
All roads point to the rapper Speech, who was born Todd Thomas in Milwaukee. And maybe you don't know Speech, but he would later team up with a rapper named Headliner, and they would form Arrested Development. Huh. And they were the ones that gave us songs like Mr. Wendell and Tennessee. So there you go, a little Wisconsin hip-hop history, because if I only focused on yacht rock and polka music, we would run out of material in very, very short order. So
I didn't think there was such a thing as too much Wisconsin, but that might be too much Wisconsin.
That's our tie-in to hip-hop history here. In other entertainment news, I am so happy to have on Netflix season 2 of Wednesday is now running. Any chance you watched Wednesday in its first run with Jenna Ortega?
No, I never did. I don't really know. It's not in my vein, I guess. I don't know.
Well, it normally wouldn't be. Now, of course, it's loosely based on the Addams Family, yeah. You know, the 1960s sitcom about this, you know, family of outcasts living in a haunted house and all the supernatural things that they can do. Okay, that's fine. A nice little, you know, reboot of it, right? If it hadn't been that tie, if it was just like some haunted house family, you know, murder mystery thing, I might not have been interested either. But there was that tie-in, so we watched, and I mean, it's good overall, but Jenna Ortega is great. I mean, nobody plays that kind of a droll, sarcastic, outcast young woman better than she does. And I've never seen Jenna Ortega in anything else that she does. I know the name, but I know nothing about her except her work in this, and it's just so good.
I think that is the only review I've ever heard of that show, is that just
really?
She's really good. Yeah, that is, I think, all I know about it.
Well, I mean, everything else is, I don't want to say predictable. It's not, but I mean, she's just, her performance is outstanding in otherwise good storytelling. There was a good story arc in the first season. I'm sure that this one will do well additionally. So I know yesterday I talked about watching the Ed Sullivan documentary on Netflix, and we watched that only after we caught season 2 of Wednesday, which is coming on. So I just wanted to bring that up there for, you know, your own streaming recommendations next time you're on Netflix.
Put it on the list.
Not you yourself, just the whole audience, yeah. Everybody, if they're out there, they can watch
people.
A little. Yeah, people, all the peoples that are there. All right, one more news story before we hear from Dan Schaefer down in Milwaukee, and it deals with the U.S. Supreme Court is now officially being asked to overturn same-sex marriage, even though a lot of the, you know, justices who were on the court at the time are still there. And to get to the point that we're at now, we have to bring back a character from back in the day who led to our country having same-sex marriage legalized, and that was a former local clerk by the name of Kim Davis. She was a county clerk in Kentucky who was actually jailed for 6 days in 2015 for refusing to issue marriage licenses to a gay couple on religious grounds. Not only did she face time behind bars, but she is now appealing a $100,000 jury verdict for emotional damages and another $250,000 in attorney's fees because her own obstinance, what she claims is her religious expression, but she was working in a state office in the first place. But she's saying that, you know, her religious freedom should allow for her not to have to pay this jury verdict. And while she's at it, she says, you should overturn the whole decision, known as the Obergefell decision. Now, the court has not taken it up. I want to make pains to say that. What has happened is that because Kim Davis, this Kentucky clerk, was directly tied to the original case, she would uniquely have standing to bring the case back, in this case, appealing the jury award. And she's saying, while we're at it, that whole decision was egregiously wrong, as she puts it, and is asking the court to take legal action to strike down the Obergefell decision. So she's made the petition. That's what's making the headlines. This is the first time the U.S. Supreme Court is officially being asked to consider overturning Obergefell. But we won't know for some time yet if the court will take up the case or not. If I'm reading correctly, it only needs four justices to agree to take up the case to hear it. So put it on your legal radar as something we may be hearing more about from the U.S. Supreme Court. We'll visit with Dan Schaefer coming up in just a bit. I'm Pat Kreitlow from Up North News here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Up North News is a separate entity from Civic Media, but we so love this partnership. We're buddies, we're besties, especially weekday mornings from 6 to 9, where I get to tell you, you can follow my team over at upnorthnewswi.com. Sign up for our newsletters there, newsletters plural, including one on the weekdays that yesterday included a link to a story about seven places to visit in Wisconsin Dells that have nothing to do with water parks. Get to know some of the natural features as well as spas and places to get good food and more. That's one of the many stories you find in our newsletters. Sign up at upnorthnewswi.com. Dan Schaefer is back. He was off last week. He's back in the Milwaukee area, so we'll talk a bit about the flooding there as well. But did you have a good trip out to London first and foremost?
I had a wonderful time. Yeah, it was
stop. Stop. I can't hear you over that British accent. Use your regular voice there.
Did I come back with a British accent? Did I really?
No, you did not. No. So it was a good time.
Oh yeah, we had a wonderful time and got to, you know, the trip was to celebrate one of my oldest friend's 40th birthday. So that was a really, really wonderful treat to be able to do that in such a fun place.
Gosh, one of your oldest friends is 40 years old.
Well, I've been friends with since I was young.
One of my youngest friends would be 40 years old. It's just amazing how the time flies. But you saw a concert there as well.
Yeah, we did. So, you know, part of the trip that we were going to was to go see one of our favorite bands from when we were growing up, the band Oasis. We went to see Oasis at Wembley Stadium in London on the last night of their 3-night run in London. I think they've added some more London shows for this reunion tour later in September. But it was one of the best shows I've ever seen.
Really?
Because I think there's one thing to see Oasis in the United States, which I did when I was in college. I saw them in Chicago. But I think seeing them in England, when people just love that band so much, and singing along with 90,000 people to every word of every song. Like, they would have a B-side from an album that came out in 1994, and every person knows every word. And it's just this very cool communal experience to just be there with so many people who are just experiencing so much joy.
Is it the joy because the brothers didn't like fight and break up right in front of them or anything that, like that?
That's part of it too. Okay. Everybody is shocked that this they have made it, I guess, what, 4 weekends now into their reunion tour without the brothers collapsing on each other.
I was going to say, we don't know if they've made up or if they've simply decided to make money. But either way, it worked out well for everybody in the crowd. So good for them. Describing this, talking about the concert and Wembley and the UK and everything, is simply a way of conveying to all of you that the political editor of Civic Media and I don't have a lot of new political stuff to talk about because we are 2.5 weeks into the governor's race of 2026, and Governor Evers declined to run for a third term. Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez got in the next day, and that's it. I mean, there has been no significant motion. Other than somebody teasing on social media last night. Did you see that from Kelda Royce?
I did not.
Kelda Royce, this was, now, again, this is on her personal Facebook account. So, I mean, it's not something that was that everybody was going to see. But she was at an ice cream shop, and she talked about a particular flavor of ice cream and was basically reminiscing about her 2018 run for governor and then hashtagged it out 2026 governor. So, again, it's not the announcement. It's the I may be getting ready for an announcement. And the fact that we're talking about that tells you how little movement there's been in this race so far.
Well, good. Well, I appreciate all the candidates, you know, while I was away, not yes. making some extra news, giving me a little bit of time to be here and process the new information as it
well,
comes.
You were going to London. We were like, oh, this is when the governor's going to announce he's not running or that he
exactly.
is running. So you were thankful to get that much out.
Yeah, exactly. One of the things I was going to ask you here, Pat, was like, what did I miss while I was gone? Doesn't sound like on the political news front that there was all nope. that much as far as state news, plenty happening elsewhere. But yeah, you know, it seems like Tom Tiffany's been making some posts. He was down in this area at Wisconsin
yeah.
State Fair making the rounds. Seems like he's headed towards a run, at least on the Republican side, does it not?
Well, it certainly seems that way, though. I always, you know, my default position is always that it's more of a fundraising tool. And in my mind, they're you know, guilty until proven innocent, simply doing this for, you know, to build up their name ID. I'm not saying he won't get in, but that's always the, you know, the bias that I come to. So let me explain what I think is happening here. And then, as often happens, after I give you my theory, you tell me how full of garbage I am. So here's the, again, I take you back to 2018 when Kelda Royce was running and my friend Dana Walks and Kathleen Vinehout and so many other people. Because the then state superintendent, Tony Evers, was not tipping his hand one way or the other as to whether he'd be running for governor. And people waited and waited. And finally, some people said, we can't wait, so we got to get in. And so you had this large candidate field. And then Tony Evers said, I'm running for governor, to which everybody else pretty much, I'm not saying they'll admit this out loud, but pretty well went, well, that was a waste of time, because they knew that Tony Evers had the name ID. And sure enough, you know, he won that primary handily. And that's all good in the end, but not for those people that got into the race. I'm contending this is all happening again. And this time it's Josh Call, because again, like Tony Evers, state superintendent, the attorney general has much higher name ID than almost anybody else in the race. Doesn't make him people's favorite candidate necessarily, but he is definitely the one who, if he were to announce, that's my theory as to why some people are really trying to wait for him to either commit to the race or commit to run once again for attorney general. Are you buying any of this?
I think there's some logic to it. There's some logic to it going on here.
Okay.
I think that makes sense. I think, you know, the thing about Josh Call is, you know, you win two statewide races, you probably are the front runner coming into the race for governor. Now, whether he'd be an overwhelming front runner, I don't think that would necessarily be the case. I think there's a lot of qualified candidates in this field. I think, you know, I think there's going to be a kind of a regional element to this primary, too, because I think, you know, Kelda Royce being from Madison, David Crowley being from Milwaukee, maybe there are like ways to consolidate votes in different parts of the state. That could play out, but what we haven't seen is the whole bunch of people jumping into the race all at once, and so I do think that, you know, given that there is going to be every statewide office is going to be open here too. You know, if Josh Call runs, there's going to be an open race for attorney general. If Sarah Godlewski runs for lieutenant governor, which she has hinted at, then there's going to be an open race for secretary of state and on down the line. So I think there's going to be and then, you know, couple that with what's happening in the state legislature, where for the first time in 15 years, the Democrats have a realistic chance of flipping both chambers of the state legislature. You might see some qualified candidates. You know, we've already seen a couple from the assembly take the step up to run for Senate. And you probably have a number of qualified people who are, you know, joining or campaigning for the first time might be running for assembly instead of, you know, taking a shot at governor or something like that. So there's a lot of open offices that are going to be on the ballot in 2026. It's a huge opportunity for Democrats up and down the ballot across the state. So it's not just the governor's race that we should be watching, you know, and when people are making their various decisions in these announcements, it's everything up and down the ballot as well.
We're talking to Dan Schaefer. You can get his newsletter at therecombobulationarea.news. And of course, you can read his work over at the Civic Media website, where he serves as political editor. One of the names that, again, doesn't have a broad statewide, knowledge yet is Mary Felskowski, the state Senate president. She's from the Tomahawk area, but her name does come up occasionally in news stories about an interest in running for governor. But getting back to Tom Tiffany, I wonder if instead maybe that's the play that's happening up north with Republicans. Are they thinking that Congressman Tiffany is looking at a run for governor, so now they're going to need somebody else to run for Congress up in the 7th District? And again, it's all parlor games. We don't know. But Mary Felskowski is a name that people should get to know, because she may end up as a candidate for one or the other.
Yeah, that's true. I think, you know, and she gave it during the final budget session. She gave this really kind of extended, impassioned speech, pushing back on the budget. She was, I think it was the first time in a very long time that the majority leader and the Senate president were at odds on the budget. So Mary Felskowski voted against it while Devin Lemahieu was voting for it. And she gave this impassioned speech against the budget. And his sons, it's like, it was when a politician makes a speech like that, the political editors of the world have their eyebrows raised a little bit, you know, they perk up a little bit. It's like, what's she going for here? Mm-hmm. And so I thought that was very interesting that she, you know, gave that kind of speech and had that kind of position on the budget. Was obviously very critical of Tony Evers in that speech as well. So, but I also think too that's, you know, the fact that we have multiple candidates from northern Wisconsin who are considering a statewide run for on the Republican side. I just think it goes to show kind of the shift in the center of power for the Republican Party in Wisconsin. You know, for so long the stronghold was the Wau counties, Waukesha, Ozaukee, and Waukesha and Washington counties around Milwaukee, and when they would be racking up like 70% Republican margins for Scott Walker, whoever it might be, in kind of the early 2000s and early 2010s. And now, as the Wau counties are getting more and more purple every election, that center of power for Republican parties, I think, moving north a bit. And I think that is indicative of the fact that Tiffany is even and Felskowski are even considering this run statewide, because I don't know if that necessarily would have been the case, you know, 15 years ago.
No. And on the Democratic side, I think it's less geographic than it is place on the spectrum. And I'm certain you have heard some of the same chatter from folks on the progressive side that they want to, and you hear this at the national level too, go bolder. You know, they want somebody who is, you know, unabashedly progressive or liberal, and saying that voters are tired of mealy-mouthed, you know, squishy-sounding centrist Democrat moderates, and they want somebody that is more, you know, fire-breathing. And we've talked about this before, that, you know, there's the concern that will turn off a lot of moderate voters. So that's where the question really is where are those voters somewhere in the center? Are they actually more progressive, and they just want a Democrat who, you know, just tells it like it is? Or is that going to turn them off? And again, when you're talking generically, it's hard to know which one is right. But it is a very real debate that I'm hearing in Democratic circles.
Yeah, it's the question of driving turnout versus that, you know, from people who might not vote for you in every election and getting those kind of base voters who are there every time. I guess I just don't see it the same as there's an ideological bent to this, because I just don't think there's a, you know, candidates that have been announcing or potentially announcing, are going, oh, we're going for the progressive lane. You know, we're going for this. I think you have to be a party that's building the big tent. And I think, you know, I there are a lot of progressives that I agree with on a lot of things. But one of the things that I do find frustrating from time to time is that lack of wanting to build a big tent, having a purity test around certain things. And I don't really agree with. And I think you have to have, people with lots of different viewpoints, diverse viewpoints from across the ideological spectrum, and diverse viewpoints from, you know, people from representing different demographics, backgrounds, whatever it might be.
Dan Schaefer is the political editor for Civic Media and also writes the Recombobulation Area, the website, the newsletter. The recombobulationarea.news is where you find that. A local update is next for some of you. Others will have some final news and notes here live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Hey, on the Civic Media app, there's a new voice note feature, so feel free to use that and send us a little audio message, and we may put it up on air. Again, that's the Civic Media app. You can either text us or use the voice note feature as well. It's going to be a busy week in Wisconsin. Look at all these county fairs. There's the Ashland County Fair, the Brown County Fair, the Dodge County Fair, the Door County Fair, the Grant County Fair, Juneau County, Kenosha County, Sawyer County, Washera County, all having fairs coming up this weekend. And then down where Dan Schaefer is in Milwaukee, they've got Irish Fest coming up Thursday through Sunday. So, Dan, I don't know if are you, I don't know how many of the festivals that you get to. Is it like a bingo card? Do you try to check them all off in 1 year or over a period of time? Where are you on Irish Fest?
You know, I thought 1 year when I was working at Milwaukee Magazine a number of years back, I was going to try to go to every ethnic festival. Mm-hmm. And then I just, once I put those all down on a list, I was like, oh, this is way too ambitious. I'm not going to be able to do all of this. Yeah. I might check out Irish Fest. Probably not the first one I would circle on my calendar when I'm going through the list. I like the... You know, when it's not the stuff at the Summerfest grounds, I like the kind of local street festival ones.
Oh, sure.
In Milwaukee, better than the, the big Summerfest grounds ones and all of that. So that those are the ones that I tend to give a higher priority.
Speaking of getting around Milwaukee, what else have you seen since you got back, given all the flash flooding from over the weekend? You're high and dry, I assume?
Yeah, we are lucky to be, we live on a hill near the Menominee River, so lucky to be where we are, and we had a little bit of water got up on Sunday morning, but nothing that we couldn't clean up with a few paper towels, so I'm feeling very grateful for that, considering what so many of the other folks in the region have been dealing with. Some people just really have lost a lot, and I, you know, the first responders in the region have done just a phenomenal job at helping people where they can, considering all of the flash flooding and the fact that people were at state fair and brewer games when this was all getting started, and you're not hearing about, you know, the kinds of tragedies that you don't want to hear about, I think has been pretty remarkable. So kudos to them first and foremost for answering the call, and for all the people who've been stepping up and helping neighbors and doing whatever needs to be done. It's just been a lot. You know, I've lived in Milwaukee for the better part of the last 15, 20 years now. This is that was the biggest, one day of flooding that I had ever seen here. I think there was one day in 2008. 8 when I first moved to Milwaukee. When I my first day on the job as an intern at the Fox 6 internet web desk, I was spent the day editing flood video. So it just reminded me of that this week. That was when, you might remember, Lake Delton and Wisconsin Dells had the crazy floods and all of that. And so, yeah, it's been crazy. And so yesterday, after I was getting some work done, you know, catching up from the week away, and I decided to like go down to Tosa Village, where there has been a lot of videos of flooding. So I thought I'd, you know, maybe try and grab a couple photos, a couple videos, help out the news team and the social team to get some stuff for that. And so I go down there and I start taking some photos, and there are a couple other news teams down there, and Channel 4 and Channel 12 were both down there. And as I'm walking around, I happen to run into former candidate for state superintendent Brittany Kinzer, walking right down in walking her dog in Wauwatosa as well. So that was, you know, there's always a Wisconsin connection, always a Wisconsin politics connection, I guess, for me as well. And I guess about 20 minutes after I left, the governor showed up at that exact spot. So had I waited a little bit longer, I would have had an interesting run-in with the governor there too.
Well, sure. I mean, the intersection of news and politics and any street in Wisconsin can sometimes be a busy intersection. Which reminds me, looking at the Civic Media lineup here for today, coming up next on Matt and Air on Air, just minutes away here on the Civic Media Radio Network, yours truly will visit with Jane and Greg at 9:35, but then the guest listed after the 10 o'clock news is State Senator Kelda Royce. And then that's followed by the Todd Alba Show, which at 2:35 will have Chris Henry from the EAA Museum on James Lovell's legacy, you know, Milwaukee's own. But then at 3:35, State Senator Kelda Royce will be joining the Todd Alba Show as well. So, I mean, she's not here to make an announcement. She's going to be both on Matt and Air on Air and Todd Alba. Those two are all the time fighting over, you know, various contests, who can get the most callers and things like that. You know, they're both going to see who can pry in a, you know, a campaign declaration out of her first. So, Kelda, I hope you're forewarned about the day you've got ahead of you here.
I'm doing the meme here of Brian Windhorst pointing his fingers up to the sky saying, what's going on here? What's going on with this with these multiple radio bookings for a Tuesday?
That's all. Keeping that name out there. And of course, finally, I mean, I don't know what to say about the Brewers other than that. A, how fun, but B, despite the flash flooding and everything, when they said, look, the parking lots are flooding and we may not, you know, if you can't get in, you can't get your Jacob Mizrowski t-shirt, we'll do it again. Oh, no, the sellout crowd showed up anyway. That town, that team is doing so much good for that town.
They absolutely are. It's such a fun team to follow and watch and everything. And I think, you know, the way that they've been winning is fun. The personalities on the team are fun. You know, I missed a little bit of the pancake Pat yes. silliness that was happening. But you need, I think, in a long baseball season, in the dog days of August, you need goofy storylines to keep you going. So that's really fun. They've just been terrific. And now they're, you know, just a couple wins away from we're getting, you know, all the George Webb stuff starting back up here in and around Milwaukee.
Now you can't say it out loud. Now it feels like a curse.
Yeah.
We don't want to jinx
anything. Don't want to jinx it.
No, we're having fun along the way. Dan Schaefer, thank you so much. Good to talk to you as always. Have a great day.
You as well.
All right, and thanks to all of you for being here today as well, and our guests, Hans Brighton Moser, Sheila Everhart of the Wisconsin Agricultural Tourism Association, Jeff Renneke from Friends of the Apostle Islands, Dan Hagen from WJFW Newswatch 12, and to you for being here as well. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Up North News is the Wisconsin outlet for Courier Newsroom, a pro-democracy news outlet. Matt and Air on Air is coming up next. Enjoy your Tuesday. We'll see you back here 6 a.m. tomorrow, bright and early, here up north.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.